Outside of the Virtual Hardwood, it's the NLSC Podcast, episode number 284. Andrew with you once again. I'm joined this week by Kenny.
It's good to be back.
Welcome to the new and improved NLSC Podcast, Kenny, your first show under the new format.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing what kind of conversation develops under the new format.
It's been pretty fun so far. We've been able to do a couple of good interviews, etc. I know you enjoyed the Tim Kitzrow interview.
Yeah, that was a really great interview. I definitely recommend anybody who hasn't listened to it yet to give it a listen. And yeah, it was great to hear how much he got into it, and it was kind of ad-libbed a lot of those lines as well.
That was a lot of fun to be chatting to Tim, and he's a great guy. Obviously, that comes across on the podcast. And the other thing that may come across on that episode, if I sound like I'm geeking out, I am. But I am trying to rein it in as well, so that's
yeah,
me. Yeah,
nobody blames you for geeking out a little bit. I certainly would have as well.
that's good, because I doing my best to hold back, but that was certainly a geek out moment. But no, lots of fun on the podcast. It's we're waiting for the preview season to start. Of course, we were talking to Izzy last week, and it was great to have Izzy Snow on the show. We talked to a longtime member of the community and a content creator as well. And as we pointed out, Kenny, it's only a month away from EA Play. It's really crawled up, really just snuck up on us.
I'm looking forward to it, because I think NBA Live is going to have to bring a lot to the table in order to, I guess, even really keep up with 2K at this point. So
definitely.
Yeah, looking forward to see what they can bring.
And we'll certainly try to get some more interviews going with the developers if we can, so with some other people from the community and some other figures that you may or may not remember. We'll certainly do our best. I guess one news announcement at the moment, Kenny, for the NBA Live 19, they've brought back the Live Strike events, where the rewards for live events are only available for a limited time, so they've got a new court and everything, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. I'll have to go back into NBA Live 19 at some point and check that out, because I know it's been a few months for me since I've really played NBA Live 19, so yeah. I need to go back in, check out some of the new content, and maybe even some of the new Jay Williams lines.
Oh, of course. We're such a fan. So I guess you missed out on the Stretch Monroe, the NBA Street events then?
Yeah, I did, unfortunately. I guess every time I've booted up NBA Live 19, I've required to download. It's like a new patch is downloaded, and it kind of takes a while for me since like my internet connection isn't the fastest. So, yeah, I end up going and playing other games.
Well, that's right. It's that time of the year where we've played a lot of both games, I suppose, at this point. So we're maybe looking at other things, and it is that kind of lull in the year. I did actually end up winning the game, a couple of games, and getting unlocking Stretch and the shoe, but not the Julius Erving throwback, unfortunately. By the time I went to give that another go, the event had expired. Lost 8 games in a row thanks to some people who just do not know how to play basketball, virtual or otherwise, unfortunately. So it took me about 10 games to unlock 2 items. So that was kind of frustrating, but very rewarding in the end to get Stretch. I reckon they'll bring him back, because, I mean, it's obviously a great gimmick, and the big heads was a fun idea too. So that was, don't know if you've seen any of the footage or the screenshots, but that was pretty funny.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, online kind of lets down NBA Live 19 a bit. But
agreed.
At the same time, it's great to see that they're pushing through this new content, and you know, hopefully by the time NBA Live 20 comes out, they'll iron out some of the issues they have with online. But yeah, unfortunately, they can't iron out the issues they have with the user base.
Well, that's the problem with 2K as well, isn't it? It's
it's not exclusive to Live, so yeah.
Or indeed, basketball gaming in general. It's perhaps we all need to be better with the with our online toxicity and whatnot. But those are fun. Hopefully they bring it back. I had a bit of fun when I finally got it done. If you check out this week's Friday Five, of course, cheap plug here, you can check out some ideas for how you can, or how NBA Live could improve on live events and live run moving forward. Check that out in the Friday Five. But yeah, this week we are talking about NBA 2K, episode 282 with Ben. That's Arcane, of course. We were going to talk about a decade of dominance, the 2K's reign of, not terror, I suppose. Certainly their dominant showing. We will circle back to that. We'll circle back to that topic in a future show. But this week, Kenny, we're actually going to be talking about the long and winding road to 99.
Yeah, it certainly has become a long and winding road to 99. More so in 2K than NBA Live at the moment. But yeah, it's something that I suppose I find myself engaging in every year, and yeah, looking forward to the discussion.
So tipping things off, of course, the Road to 99 is something that exists in both, as you said, live and 2K these days in the career modes. NBA 2K actually literally has the Road to 99 as its branding, the whole journey, and that's what I suppose we'll mostly be talking about, but also covering how it relates to NBA Live as well. Because as we were talking about before we started recording, there's a different way that each game approaches it very differently as to how you get to 99 and how easy it is and the rewards that you get on the way. And the whole attribute upgrades, both games have gone back and forth in how they handle it, and it's a bit frustrating at times. I think we both agree that they have changed, and some methods have felt a lot better than others.
Yeah, they have chopped and changed a lot, and I think for me, NBA Live has kind of gone backwards as far as, you know, their progression system is concerned, because I really liked how it was in NBA Live 16, where archetypes, or I suppose, you know, player types, as it was called in that game, were a bit more flexible. So if you upgraded, like, certain attributes, it would ask you if you wanted to change your archetype, which, you know, I thought was great, because it meant you weren't locked into just, you know, one style of play. And I think that is something that, you know, both games could definitely implement at some point. But unfortunately, with the, you know, the prevalence of the 2K League, I don't see 2K doing that at any time soon, because, you know, there's just too much at stake as far as, like, esports and, you know, the competitive nature of the mode.
Definitely. And it's very much built on those player types, those archetypes, which is funny, because in a career mode in the NBA side of things, a lot of players over their careers can evolve into different styles of players. And there's many players we could name, but you look at a player like a Michael Jordan, who obviously I'm going to mention his anus, being the fanboy that I am, but starting out, and he had a bit of the mid-range shot, but was certainly known as a dunker, which he had pretty much through his whole career, as until the athleticism started to fade slightly as he reached his 40s. But developing that mid-range shot and then getting the three-point shot and not really having that limitation. But you've got to have that balance for the league, as you say, but also online play. And it shows you how much the Road to 99 is really tied into the online side of my career, the connected modes, and of the one as well, that there has to be that balance. And it means that you have to really, I guess, curate the experience and limit it just to have that balance.
Yeah, and, you know, the example I would use as, like, a player who kind of, I suppose, changed their game as they got older was Vince Carter. When he was, like, in his rookie years and, like, you know, first few seasons of his career, he was jumping out of the gym, performing crazy dunks, and now he's more or less a spot-up shooter, although he can still dunk, which still kind of, you know, amazes me, considering, like, he's in it, what, he'll be in his 22nd year next season, so...
22nd or 21st?
I could have sworn I read that it was 22nd, because he was going to surpass...
Dirk,
and, you know, that he was going to become, like, the first person to go into his 22nd year, but, that, yeah, you know, I might be wrong about that.
No, you're right, that would be 22nd, and that might make him the first player to play in 4 decades, possibly?
Yeah, it's possible.
'90s, 2000s, 2010s, and 2020s? Like, just over the line of the 4 decades? That's incredible.
Yeah, that is amazing.
Considering there was a couple of years there where we thought his career was just going to be completely derailed by injuries, and that's a thing of the past as well, which is...
Yeah.
But that is, as you say, a great example of a player who has had to change as his age, change with the times of the game, and not having that flexibility, and that is something we had in NBA Live 16, and I thought they were going to stick with that. Obviously, they didn't with Live 18. And you also brought up before we started recording that 2K16 had the bucket system, which they also kept in 2K17, where you'd put levels, you'd buy levels of attributes in each category, and it would just give you maybe plus 2, plus 3, plus 4, plus 1, depending on what level it was at. And yeah, that was a different way of doing it.
And while the 2K16 system wasn't perfect, I kind of liked it because it would show you an archetype that was reflective of how you kind of upgraded your player instead of locking you into a certain archetype.
Yeah.
And I think that's a much better system. And it kind of, like, my player in 2K16, he was kind of he had like the athleticism and was like a lockdown defender in the early stages of his career, but then as the seasons went on, I developed that jump shot with him. So it was like a real, there was like a really interesting progression that kind of happened organically through that system. And it's something that I really miss from, you know, the subsequent games.
And of course, 2K17 introduced the archetypes, which was more limiting then, but they only had the broad archetypes, whereas we thought we'd have more choice with all the combinations introduced in 2K18. And now you've had that in 2K19 as well, since you skipped 2K18. But as I guess you've found, a lot of the combination archetypes aren't as good as advertised, and the pure archetypes are sometimes the best, certainly the pure sharps are the best, but there's a lot of archetypes that really aren't viable for both online and offline, and I know our good friend The X has found that himself when he's playing with us.
Yeah, some of the archetypes are just... I think there needs to be a lot more parity as far as like the archetypes are concerned, because there are some that give you a definite advantage over the others. And, you know, I think all builds should have like risk reward, and some of them are just definitely overpowered at this point. Like you said, you know, pure sharps. I think as far as centers are concerned, glass cleaners, like every time I come up against a glass cleaner, even though I'm a rebounding rim protector, I'm always worked off the boards by those guys. And, you know, that shouldn't be the case, even though I might be slightly weaker on the boards. You know, common sense and, you know, basketball IQ should come into it as well. So if I have superior position, I should be able to get the boards over a glass cleaner instead of the ball seemingly going to them every time.
It's the illusion of choice, I guess, really, with the amount of archetypes we have, because there's only some that are viable.
Yeah. Some just, I don't know, like, I think lockdown defender as a perimeter player, I don't see there being a lot of incentive to choose that archetype, even though it's one that kind of interests me. So, some are just not viable, and I think that's definitely something that needs to change.
Ben and I were playing a couple of games last night. We're recording this on the Saturday. We were playing a couple of games on Friday night, and we actually came up against... Oh, no, it was somebody who was going to join in but then left the lobby, was a defensive playmaker or a playmaking defender, I forget which I don't see that one very often. So it really comes down to, if you play online, you've really got to pick those archetypes. And interestingly, Ben found this on NBA 2K wishlist.com. Which archetype you choose even determines how many cap breakers you need at certain points to get up at the next point in your overall on the road to 99. Sometimes it's two cap breakers, sometimes it's one. Some archetypes you need to get three cap breakers to get to the next level. And that's kind of interesting as well, how everyone's road to 99 is kind of different in that way.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think that it should be standard across the board. I don't like the idea that, you know, a shooting archetype might take three cap breakers to get to the next point, whereas, you know, a playmaking one will only take one, you know. That's not like an actual example, that's just like a hypothetical example. But I think, you know, they need to make everything even, because at this point, I don't know, it's just making everything a bit too homogenous, I think. It's not, you're not choosing an archetype that suits the way you play, you're choosing the one that is by far the best. And
yeah,
that needs to be tweaked.
And actually, the example you gave out is pretty accurate. As far as the archetypes go, glancing at that list, and it highlights something that we've talked about in recent shows, the whole metagaming aspect. You know, you've got to get the right archetype, the right animations, the right, you know, wingspan, everything. And there should be a risk and reward and factor to it, as you said earlier, but there is so much focus on the metagaming and picking that optimal, correct archetype and all the attributes, that if you make a wrong choice and you spend too much time on it, that's a lot of time wasted.
Yeah, and it's not the way I like to play games either, because I like, you know, for example, I'll use an example you'll like. When I play Fallout New Vegas, I like, you know, yep. risk-reward builds. I like players that are flawed. So I don't want to be like, you know, I want to play as a character that best reflects, you know, what my strengths and weaknesses are. And I don't want to feel like I'm penalized for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as I was saying before we started recording, I was thinking about these different cap breakers, the different number of cap breakers, I should say. And it makes sense because to get to the next rating point on the road to 99, you need to spend a certain amount of VC. It's not the combination of ratings that add up to it, because that's what I always thought, and that's why I was trying to balance it when I was upgrading. No. It's the amount of VC you spend between levels. And at that level, once you hit about 89, 90, and into the 90s, it's 8,000 to 10,000 VC gets you up a level, which you can earn pretty easily with a cap breaker, because it takes longer to get the cap breaker. You get the VC, so the VC is no longer the problem. Now it's the grinding for the my points. So it's how much VC you spend. And because different archetypes unlock different ratings at different times, you may not have to spend enough on each individual upgrade on the cap breaker to actually get that 8,000 to 10,000 VC to upgrade. And that's also highlights a problem, is that the way that the ratings unlock in those cap breakers aren't necessarily conducive to your archetype. I think I've had times in the last couple of cap breakers where with my sharpshooting playmaker, I've unlocked strength, which is fine, but it's not, you know, I've still got a couple of notches on three-point shooting, for example. So you would think that being a primary skill of my archetype, that's what I'd unlock first, and then I would develop those secondary skills. But no, this way you have to grind more. And yeah, I think it even goes against the whole archetype concept.
Kind of does. And I think in an ideal world, we wouldn't need VC, but yeah. That's not where I was going. But in an ideal world, I think you would be able to choose what attributes you could add to on each cap breaker, as opposed to being assigned, you know, the attributes that the game wants you to add to at each cap breaker. So, some of the decisions are a bit strange. I know that my rebounding rim protector has a few more additions it can make on three-point shooting, which I guess will come in, like, you know, future cap breakers.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily going to help my archetype all that much, because I think, you know, if my ceiling as a three-point shooter is 50 overall, then I just don't see the point of adding, you know, extra points to it.
I think they could do a better job with the individual attributes of each archetype. They don't feel particularly balanced, I think, and it comes back to not being able to shift gears and change and have that flexible archetype that we saw in NBA Live 16. My initial knee-jerk reaction, when why do they do this? I would say, oh well, to promote microtransactions and money and make money, you know, on VC sales. But the thing is, with the way the cap breakers work, you earn so much VC in between cap breakers that that's not necessarily the case. So it seems more of a design flaw rather than an intentional design to make money. So that makes it even more confusing.
Yeah, and another way it's a design flaw to me is that if you really wanted to, you could track, like, the different attributes you add at each cap breaker and kind of use that information online as kind of like a scouting report. So you could say, okay, that other person's the same archetype as me. They're at a certain level, so they have these certain attributes. And again, it's just a way that the game is making all the player types more homogenous.
And it's you can't really try out all these archetypes because you can only spend so much time and money, really. Well, most people only want to have so much time and so much money that they're willing to spend to check out different archetypes. So you really have to commit to one and just... And again, if you commit to the wrong one, you can change animations, of course, but if you... Like the X has done, he's got one that's not even... Not happy with online, but not. He says it's not fun to play with offline as well. So he's already put some time into it. Why is he going to start over? Especially, you know, he's got a family, so as other gamers do. And I guess it comes down to, oh well, it's the majority of the fan base is younger, whatever. But or paying with their parents' credit card, I suppose. So maybe they've got the disposable income that way. But I still think it's a bad way of doing it. And again, referring back to the bucket system, you could put that extra cap breaker, if I recall correctly, from 2K17, you could put that in any one, couldn't you? Once you unlocked the next cap breaker, the next level, you could use it on any bucket up to the maximum, couldn't you?
I believe so, and I think in 16 it was actually I kind of liked it more in 16 because when you got like that, say, cap breaker, you could add it to any of the buckets, which I thought was kind of interesting. And it would almost like it could significantly change the way your player actually plays, because it would add attributes to multiple, you know, different areas. So I think in a sense, like, I'm thinking about it more now, and I think I like NBA 2K16's system the most, actually.
I think they had a pretty good system that year, 2K16, and they also didn't have the archetypes yet as well, so it wasn't quite as restrictive, although 2K17's archetypes were pretty open. I mean, look at those dunks I was throwing down with my playmaker in 2K17, which I kind of miss, or at least this year I'm dunking again. But
and I was pretty good at slashing with my stretch big as well, so yeah.
It was definitely that more, opened up that more all-around play. And I suppose, to the point you made earlier, now that it's going towards that esports direction with the 2K League and everything, they're trying to control the experience a little bit more, have those different archetypes, and have Pro-Am reflect the 2K League, which has also resulted in things like the removal of the three-player minimum, so you have to have five now, as we've said before, and that's basically killed Pro-Am for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's killed Pro-Am for a lot of people, because when you get on the server with five people, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of matchup potential. Like, that one time we did do it, we faced that same team twice, and I was like, oh, okay, so this is what it's going to be like.
And I'm noticing a lot of the usernames that we saw playing against us in Team Pro-Am in previous games, I'm seeing them in the Rec Center as well. So clearly a lot of the people who... And we play against a lot of squads that only had three or four players when we were playing in 16 and 17. So it's clearly not us. And maybe it's because we're in Australia. Maybe it's different in the US. You may have a better go of it, but North America, but in Canada as well, obviously. So it could just be us, but a lot of people are saying that it's very gatekeeping, and it is. And it's really curating the experience. And the fact that it's now about the road to 99, and the road to 99 has all the rewards and all the reward tiers as well, I guess they don't want to make it too easy for people to get to 95, 96, 97, 98. And of course, at 99 overall, you're guaranteed a copy of the game. Stocks are limited, apparently. 10 million of them selling every year, but stocks are limited, apparently. And digital copies too, because they run out. Well, I mean, throwback jerseys apparently run out in the NBA store in the neighborhood, a digital item that they could allow for anyone. So who knows these days what you can put a limited quantity on.
Also, you know, digital playing cards as well, because they have like that whole fear of missing out tactic with, you know, the moments cards. So.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, because couldn't possibly create more digital content for people's servers. Absolutely. So... It's gone from that direction, and the online, that focus on the online, I think, is really changing the offline experience. I saw on the NBA 2K official NBA 2K Reddit, somebody posted a screenshot from NBA 2K11 playing My Career, and they were 99 overall, and talking about how they really enjoyed just going through with skill points back in the day and getting to 99, which I guess is always the ultimate goal, but now it's really become that central goal with all everything that you can unlock. The My Court creation has to be unlocked, and animation levels have to be unlocked, and everything on that path. It's really become about that journey.
Yeah, and I think that the journey itself, like the higher you get up, the more kind of clout you can get. Because I know that I think it's overall like that 98 overall, you actually get featured on 2K TV.
Yep.
So. This idea that, you know, the better you become, like, the more kind of exposure you get, I suppose, and the more notoriety you receive. Like, it's kind of, I think it's a good tactic, because it does make you feel like you're a part of something bigger, as opposed to, like, you know, just having, like, a local save.
Sure.
But at the same time, I think it's very, I don't know, it's very limiting as far as, like, you know, how you can enjoy the mode.
Elitist, would you say elitist to a certain extent?
I mean, a little bit, yeah, I suppose. And I kind of miss being able to, like, reach those higher levels, you know, just for my own sake. Like, I don't really care if I'm featured on 2K TV, even though I have been, like, a few times, not for, you know, high ratings, but, yeah, I just want to do it because I want to be the best player that I can be and, you know, kind of just, I don't know, just kind of dominate in my career, which I guess I already do, you know, at 92, but hey.
Well, I suppose that's the thing, and I'm thinking of how difficult it is to get to 99, obviously because they don't want to give away the best rewards. They don't want too many people having to be on 2K TV or to get a free copy of the game. But certainly once you get to 91, 92 overall, you pretty much dominate the league, basically. I think I was putting up stats at 85 overall. So if you have enough VC out of the box and get to 85 on the first day, your play is pretty good already. So you don't have to be 99 to enjoy the offline game, or even the online game, I suppose, because we've certainly seen people who are around 91, 92 get do pretty well online, and I think we've had some decent performances of our own. I think 92 is the sweet spot to get, because that's when you don't have to go to the damn gym and to do the gym in between games, every five games in 2K19. It was much worse in 2K18, so they've kind of improved that in 2K19, but it could be a lot better. They could take it out completely, for example. You know, the whole idea of clout and status, even getting to 93 overall, you get the VIP badge. Then it goes from the purple badge to VIP, and you get to spin the VIP wheel in the daily spin, and at a certain level you get a second spin of the wheel. I think that might be 94 or 95 overall, possibly. And I've actually, because I did an article about this, wrote an article for Monday Tip-Off, was repaving the road to 99 and talking about different, changing around the reward tiers, what you get at different tiers. And I stand by that and stand by changing it around a bit, perhaps. But it also occurred to me that they probably have done a pretty good job of getting most of the stuff people would want at the lower tiers, because you look at some of the stuff above 92 overall, and it's stuff like a free copy or appearing on 2K TV, which is nice, but again, maybe not something you care about.
Yeah.
But if you want to do things like unlock influencing trades, that's at 90 overall, so you can get there. It's a lot easier to get to, obviously, than 99. Changing the arena music, influencing free agency, changing the rotations, being able to select the jerseys, all that's pretty much unlocked between the 85 and 90. So a lot of the good stuff is where people are going to get. So I do think they've taken a good approach there, and that all the stuff above 92 overall is basically a bragging rights reward, which appeals to the people that it appeals to. But I still feel that perhaps some of that could be a little bit more special. It's kind of like, you know, when you finish, if you get 100% completion in GTA Vice City, and you get the t-shirt that says, I finished GTA Vice City 100% and all I got was this lousy t-shirt. It's, you know, and that's kind of a funny joke. So, like, you know, hats off to Rockstar for that. But it's kind of, you know, and I think the trope on TV Tropes is, and your reward is clothes. So it's kind of very cosmetic stuff. You can unlock a hoverboard, which is nice, but if it doesn't get you around the neighborhood any quicker, it's not really... It's a status symbol, basically, like you were saying. It's about cloud. It's about having that VIP badge or whatever. So I think they actually have done a pretty good job of getting the rewards people actually care about attainable. So I've got to give them that.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of really worthwhile things that you can unlock on the way to 90. I do like the... I like how you can... what is it? I think it's like 91 or something, where you unlock the little game in your... what is it? In your My Court?
Yeah, at 90 you get the mini basketball, and 91 you get the blacktop and exhibition 2K machines to play that.
Yeah, I think they're pretty cool touches to the game. And like, even in the My Career story, where you kind of like play that old version of 2K, that was kind of cool.
That was a very interesting touch. I really thought they did a good job with the 2K19 story, except for the plot hole where you're a rookie again. But apart from that, though, I thought it's probably up there with 2K17 as the best implementation of a story. I mean, anything after 2K18 feels like Shakespeare, to be honest. So, and no, I will never get tired of dunking on B-Fresh. But I think they did a really good job with that this year, with the way they set it up. And, you know, because we did that one evening after we finished playing our the team games with the guys, we actually got that trophy on PlayStation for playing that. And that's an ultra rare trophy. Eric Q in the forum actually commented on it and said, wow, ultra rare. And yeah, we got it, because you get to 91 and we just happened to know, you know, knowing each other and both being 91 overall, we could just quickly duck into each other's courts and get that trophy because you don't have to finish the game, just start it up. But it's an ultra rare trophy. Not many people are getting it.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising. I wonder why that is. Is it because maybe so many people are playing just kind of by themselves and have to rely on Jordan Rec Center to get games because they don't have a squad? Maybe that's why. Or maybe they just don't care. I don't know.
It could be. I mean, you and I guess we've kind of gone into the idea of trophy hunting a little bit. I know I have, because I'll go through and I'll see what haven't I done? Have I not called a play? Okay, I'll call a play and get the making changes trophy or something like that. You know, just for that Pavlovian response when it pops up on the screen. You know, you got a new trophy, hooray! It's whoever came up with that idea is a genius. Basically, they knew what they were doing with all that stuff. But it's ultra rare, and I guess maybe it's got to be worldwide, the trophies, hasn't it? That when it syncs up, it's not just Australian PSN servers, is it?
I would think so. I don't know. I'm probably not the right person to ask about that. But
I have to look it up because, I mean, I can see it being ultra rare in Australia, but certainly in the States where the game would sell the most copies, North America again, I should say, surely there are people going to each other's courts. Maybe the community is kind of antisocial. We'll play against each other, but we won't go into each other's courts to actually play the game. So it could be that.
It'd be interesting to find out. Maybe one time I guess Q doesn't own the game, but I mean, if we have an American friend that does own the game, we can do the PlayStation party and just check the trophies that way.
I might reach out to ZZ. Because he's got the game.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to find out because it's... I mean, ultra rare out of 10 million, I suppose, could still be... That's 0.2% or something of people who own the game on... Well, it's not 10 million on PlayStation alone, I suppose. I need to get the exact figures. But in any case, yeah, I thought that was interesting that we got an ultra rare trophy from just mucking around after one night playing the games because we both got to 91 overall. But it's... And it's kind of fun, and I think the other thing you get is the Beats machine as well, which is pretty... I mean, if I was more into music and that kind of music as well, I might find it more interesting, but for me, it's just kind of like a Homer's webpage, basically. You'd think the noises would get annoying after a while, but they don't. mashing all the buttons to make the most annoying sound. It's... But I think they're worthwhile rewards up to that point, and after that, it's all bragging rights stuff, and it's... But with that being said, it's kind of a shame that it has become that big bragging rights overall online, because if you want to just dominate in my career and get to that point, it's a long, long slog. I don't know if you saw the screenshot that I posted when Ben and I we made it into a YouTuber stream.
I saw that. Yeah,
Aussie YouTuber whose name escapes me at the moment, but he's reached 99 overall, so I had a look at his stats. He'd played at that time about 790 NBA games.
Wow. That's almost what? That's 9 years?
About that, yeah. And not just that.
Crazy.
Over 3,000 park games, playground games, and about 400, I think, or at least 200 pro-am games as well, walk-on. So he's basically lived on the game since September, and he's got to 99, and there's a... If I remember his name, I'll look it up on the YouTube. Look it up on YouTube again. But he's got a video where he hits 99. But that's how much grinding you have to do. How many hours would that be? And I suppose if you're playing on Hall of Fame difficulty in 5 minute quarters, I guess you could grind the My Points a lot quicker.
Yeah, but I just don't see that being fun. At the end of the day, the person who played all those hours of just My Career games and pro-am and all that, I hope he's getting some YouTube revenue for that, because I just don't see the point of spending that much time in a game that is essentially going to reset at at September. So
that's the point. You've got to put the most into it in a year. I mean, I'm 58 games, I think, into my second year at the moment of my career, and I'm about 38 games onto another career on PC, so I'm actually doing the road to 99 twice this year just to see whether I can. I'm at 89 on PC and 92 on PS4, and I believe you're 92. You haven't got to 93 yet.
Yeah, I'm 92, and I think I'm at about 90% of my first cap breaker for 93. So I am two games off the playoffs in the second season.
So we've put a lot of time in, and I play 12 and a quarters as well on both platforms. So when I play, I really set aside some time to play.
Yeah.
So I have thought if I wanted to get to, once I finish the second season, I've thought of maybe knocking it back to 5 minute quarters and just seeing if I could grind to 92, 93, 94, 95, just to see how high I could get. I don't think that I can really put in the time, though. I mean, I've enjoyed my time with 2K19. I haven't enjoyed a game this much since 2K17. Last year felt a real wash with me, the 2K18. Yeah. So I've enjoyed it, but it's just such a long slog, or a long journey. Understandably so, because of the online balance and the rewards for the upper tiers and everything. But I just can't see myself putting in the time.
I can't see myself putting in the time either. And, you know, like you, I've really enjoyed the 2K19, my career. And to a lesser extent, the story, I had my problems with the 2K19 story, but, you know, I thought it was fairly innocuous at the end of the day. But, yeah, unless I'm playing 12-minute quarters, I just don't see a point in playing my career. I guess I'm kind of a purist in that sense. I like having realistic minutes, and
yep.
Ultimately I would love realistic statistics as well, but yeah. With the way that my career is connected to online and, you know, virtual currency and everything like that, it's just not feasible to be a role player in my career.
No.
So, yeah, you just always end up dominating, and I'm sure I could probably get my stats in 5-minute games, but it's just the mindset of, like, playing half a game. It's hard to get my head around, I suppose.
And the other thing is that we've been grinding up players for our own enjoyment with my career, with the NBA career side of things, but also to build up for Pro-Am, and this year Pro-Am has been a bust for us, so it's kind of...
Mm.
I can see myself next year, if no one's really into it, if Valor and the X skip the game, as they've talked about. I was talking to Ben the other night, and he was talking about skipping the game as well. I'll get it because, you know, I'm running the site, so I kind of need it for content and everything. And I have enjoyed 2K19, so I feel positive about 2K20. So, but I may go back to my league finally next year. I was going to do it this year, but then kind of got hooked on my career again. But if we're not going to be playing online, it's a perfect time to take a break, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably about 50-50 when it comes to, you know, buying 2K20, because I have had mostly positive experience with 2K19, but there just have been, like, a few little things that just made me think that maybe 2K20 is just not worth getting. But at the same time, like, if I did get 2K20, I would probably have to create a guard, I think, because for me, the enjoyment I get out of my career is having a different experience every time. And to do that, I need to create, like, a new position.
Yep.
So in 2K16, I played small forward. 17, I was power forward. 19, I'm a center. So I'm thinking either shooting guard or point guard for 2K20 if I do eventually get it. Because if creating a guard in live at the moment is pretty much pointless if you want to be a shooter, because, you know, the online's just not there in Australia.
The lag is just not.
I'd be happy to create a guard in 2K20 and, like, a center in live 20, just to kind of get two different experiences.
And it's a shame that there's convenience in connecting the two players online and offline, but the fact that if you want to fit in with a squad, you kind of have to really, again, it comes down to that metagaming, how we had to decide, okay, who's going to be, you know, what each year in Pro-Am, and creating a player that would fit in with the other ones, but then there's also fun for us offline.
Yeah.
It's all the metagaming and the juggling, that's become a problem with the experience. And, you know, obviously I've had a pretty good being a point guard all these years. You know, you at least get to touch the ball a fair amount, you know, and I try to move the ball around as best I can, but, you know, it's everyone likes to score, everyone likes to touch the ball at some point, but if certain positions, it's harder to, you know, and certainly you taking the bullet and being the defensive center this year, you know, how many times that you've been screwed over on those layups, basically, when you're in the putbacks. Oh,
every single game. And I think that's kind of why I want to create a guard like in 2K20, is because I miss being able to like drive to the hoop and, you know, shoot from three and all that kind of stuff. And you know, I kind of enjoyed the 2K16 like super athletic player. It's been a while since I've like ran with a player like that, so I don't know what point I was getting to there, but
I mean, I guess it's because you are so locked to an experience, basically. There's only so much you can dedicate to, you know. I wouldn't want to make another player at this point, even though, well, I just spent all my VC on Michael Jordan packs this past week and got a pink diamond Jordan, so I'm happy, basically. So no regrets on that one, but I could have, at that time, having built up VC while I was waiting for the next cap breaker, I could have created a second player, but then I've got to grind the badges. I've got to, you know, you got to go through the, well, you can skip the story now. You can skip the prelude, but you've still got to go through all the early stages and everything. So it's not as feasible. You can do it in live to a certain extent, because I've seen people have multiple players in live. When you look at the road to 99 in live, of course, it's not called the road to 99, but it's still a goal to get to 99 overall, I suppose. Yeah. Seeing how people have gotten there much quicker, on one hand, that's a good thing, but at the same time, might it be too easy in NBA Live?
I think it's way too easy. I think at the moment, my player in NBA Live 19 is 92 or 93 overall, and I've barely played the game. And it's to a point where in the league portion of the game, I'm up to the third game of my career, and coach has already given me like 44 minutes a game because of how high my rating is. And I just, it's almost an argument for like the whole, you know, contrived progression system in 2K, in the way that, you know, most of the time you have to play X amount of games in order to get a start. You have to play, you know, X amount of games to become the most popular player in the league and that kind of thing. Mm. So, I kind of think NBA Live and its progression system is almost an argument for, you know, a system that's contrived, because it's just too easy.
Yeah. It feels like there needs to be a happy medium that's somewhere in the middle of those, and that maybe I'm invoking the golden mean fallacy here. I don't know, but it feels like halfway between those two ideals is a very balanced progression system that's fair, and if you have microtransactions, then the company still makes money off them, and because, you know, that's a big thing these days, as long as that remains legal, I suppose, with all the changes that are going on and potential changes there. But at the same time, you don't want the journey to be too short, but you don't want it to be so long and arduous to the point where you're just doing it to do it. And I mentioned last week the wrestling game, the second game on PS2, the WWE game, WWE SmackDown, Shut Your Mouth, where you had to play through the story mode umpteen times to unlock everything. By the time you had unlocked everything, you were sick of the game. And I think it should never get to that point, no matter what the game, is that eventually you will get sick of a game, but you should still be able to experience a lot of the cool stuff while you're still really into the game. And maybe you pick it up later and do it. And that's harder. And again, going back to a game like Fallout, you and I, we can pick up any of the Fallouts that we own, go back and do a different character playthrough. Maybe not so much in Fallout 4, but that's another topic altogether. But we can do the story a different way, the branching story. We can explore areas that we've never gone before and find all the little Easter eggs and the lore of it, everything. And you can do that with that kind of game. But with the annual releases, as you said a little while ago, it resets every year. So the road to 99, you can, even if you get almost to 99, even if you get to 99, you're back to 60 at the start of next year. I mean, yes, you can pre-order the special edition and get that boost and everything, but you're back to square one each and every year. So no matter how far you go, it can feel kind of, you really got to enjoy the experience, otherwise it does feel kind of for naught.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a major problem. Like, you have to kind of find that balance between making it a major grind, which it kind of is now, to it being like way too easy. Like, and I think honestly, 2K16 and 2K17 had that balance down pretty well. Mm. Like, those two games, there wasn't that much of a grind, it felt back then. And I suppose, like, back then, that was, like, I think, was it 2K17? No, I think it was 2K18 where the 2K League started, wasn't it?
Yes, last year with the 2K League, yep.
Yeah, so it probably, like, the whole... that whole experience definitely correlates with, you know, the inception of the 2K League, I think.
One thing I didn't like about 2K17 was having to play up your park rep to get past 95 overall. I thought that was a bit of a mistake.
Yeah, that was horrible. Yeah, thanks for reminding me of that, because I would have thought 2K17 was, like, you know, probably like almost the ideal system, but yeah, now I think about it, that was particularly horrible.
I mean,
yeah.
I liked the do and work meter. That was fine, and I liked the different practices as they were scheduled. And I got to 95 overall, actually probably a bit too quickly, I suppose, in retrospect. Although I did pay for some VC as well, so I got some boosts here and there, which accelerated the process. But the cap breakers worked pretty well. The do and work meter worked pretty well, I should say. Doing well. Doing well talking tonight. Yeah, I thought it was fine, but except for that playground system where you had to up the park rep, that was... I never think you should force players to play online, or even for that matter, play My Career. If you want to stick to the online connected modes, you should be able to. If you want to just stick to the NBA side of things, you should be able to. And there should be no disadvantage to doing either. You should be able to make a decent inroads on the road to 99 either way.
Yeah, and you look at a player like LeBron, you don't think, oh, yeah, he definitely got all the way to 99 because he played all those games in the park. It's like, no, he perfected the game in like, the league.
So, that's what Ben Simmons needs to do right now. He needs to go to Rucker Park, and he needs to work his game, he needs to up his park rep, and then, you know, the 76ers, trust the park. Don't trust the process. Trust the park rep.
Yeah, all these playoff games he's playing, they're not going to get him to, you know...
No.
To the rating he needs to be.
And, well, with that in mind, if you wanted to put a cap on it, I agree with you. I think the 2K16, 2K17 method, or even the Live 16 method, around that time was probably the best and most balanced system. If you had a cap on it, would you cap it so that you couldn't get to 99 in your first year? Or a certain amount of, if you're playing online, for example, a certain amount of games to unlock that upper cap?
I don't think 99 should be achievable in the first season, and possibly, you know, probably not even achievable in your first maybe three seasons, because when you think about it, no player has really achieved it. I mean, when would you have considered Jordan a 99 overall?
Probably, I mean, 88, because he had that was the real, you know, in 87 he had the 37.1 points per game. He had 35 in 88, and that's the year that he won the dunk contest and the MVP and Defensive Player of the Year and league leading scorer. And, you know, they got to was that their first conference finals that year, I think, possibly? Or certainly got to the second round for the first time because he finally had a team around him. But that was kind of the year that he really started to explode. And then you might even say the 88-89 season when he averaged the 32-8-8. Maybe that was his first real all-around, you know, skills are there and the athleticism is there. That's, you know, maybe that. So we're talking about 4 or 5 years into the career, and maybe even someone like a Magic Johnson, you know, and Larry Bird, same. It's kind of that peak is yeah. Really, at least after the first couple of years. I mean, all of those players had exceptional rookie seasons as well, but 99 overall, no, that's the thing.
Because it seems like you go from, what, 60 overall to 90 within, like, your first season. That's a meteoric rise, like, for somebody to go from 60 to 90. I would be for, like, starting at maybe 70 and making it more of a slow burn. Like, if it was, like, I would be okay if it was, like, you know, 70 to 85 in the first season and then 85 to 90 in the second, and then, like, you know, sky's the limit after that. Like, I don't know, turning the game into more of a grind. But
if there's a trade-off where you start better, because live kind of does that, where you start around 70 overall, and the thing with live is that your physical attributes are better. That your speed and jumping, your athletic ratings are more in line with a young player. You come into the league as a 60 overall in my career, in NBA 2K, and you've got this, if you're a guard, you've got these ratings of a player who played in the 60s, who's trying to play in the current NBA, you know, with 70-year-old knees. It's that's kind of how your attributes are. And you're supposed to be a young buck. You're supposed to be at the height of your athleticism coming out of college. So I think they need to have – you could boost the overall by having the attributes, the physical athletic attributes fairer, but then you've got to work harder on your skills, and that's what brings you up, which I think is how it should be anyway, because you've got the athleticism coming in. I mean – and you talk about, you know, LeBron or Ben Simmons spending some time at Rucker Park to get better. I mean, it's I suppose you put your time in the gym and you can get more athletic to a certain extent. But I mean, you can do jumping drills and things like that. But a jump from where you can barely leave the floor to having a 48-inch vertical doesn't really happen, I think, for most people who don't have some kind of athleticism to begin with, kind of thing. Yeah, I think if you get the physical attributes up, you can get it up to the 65-70 range, and then, like you say, have that slower burn of upping your ratings. And then it kind of balances out online as well, because if you're an online player and you... And I know, because you brought up the point, because Ben and I talked about this and mentioned... We referred to 2K as both pay-to-win and a grind, which, as you pointed out, is kind of a contradiction. I feel it's... It's kind of both, in so much as it's pay to win to a point. That on day one, there's no way you can grind 85 on day one, I don't think. I think even if you put 3 minute quarters, I don't think you could get to 85 in 24 hours. But you can buy and get to 85. And that's a big boost for online play. So that's what forces microtransactions. You know, you can either really suffer online or really, really grind or pay to actually get to 75, 80 overall on the first day or more and be viable. And I think we really need to be... That's something Live does really well, I think, is to be viable online out of the box. Because that 71, 72 overall player, because their physical attributes are decent, because their athletic ratings are okay, they can actually move from side to side within 5 minutes of... it doesn't take them 20 seconds to run across the court. You can actually keep up with people online. You can actually compete to a certain extent. Of course, if you put in the work and the grind, you are going to be much better and your players are going to be much better equipped. But that day one, trying to jump online is just, if you don't have the pre-order VC from the special edition or whatever, or pay for it, trying to play online as a 60-something overall is just not a fun experience.
Yeah, I actually did have the special edition, and I didn't get my VC like straight away. So, but I guess that's a whole other thing. But I understand how it's like both ways, and there is like an incentive to buy a VC early on. I guess for me to win the game, you kind of have to be like, you know, past 90 overall, and
true.
I guess that's kind of where my disagreement came with that whole notion. But
no, I mean, it's a fair point, because it's saying two different things, but it's kind of a weird way that 2K does it, because it's that disconnect between online and offline, no pun intended, disconnection. And that happens online as well with 2K, sadly. I think the player needs to be viable, more viable than it is right now. And the other thing that I've mentioned in previous shows and articles is the idea of different starting points for my career, that if you choose to be a role player, then you maybe get higher, then maybe cheaper to get ratings, but there's a smaller cap. Or if you choose to be a star player, you get higher starting ratings, but it's a slower burn to get that. You know, you'd have to work harder to get even better. So, I mean, you can have different starting points in my career that, and again, you've got a trade-off of, oh, I get a better head start, but it's going to be harder to upgrade from there, or I get less of a head start, but my upgrades are going to be cheaper. There's so much they could do with that, but again, is that going to eat into recurrent revenue and online balance models? You know, how is that going to work? Is people going to enjoy it that way? So I feel they're creative ideas, but do they work with 2K's model?
They probably don't, unfortunately. I think the way 2K has it now, it's probably where they want it because they don't have to necessarily think too much about it. I think, personally, I would like to see 2K have like a system where you could choose, okay, I'm straight out of college or I've spent 4 years at college. So if you spent 4 years there, you have a higher overall going in but a lower ceiling and, you know, the other way around, yeah. Like for, you know, the one and done. But
absolutely.
I think there'd be too much kind of, there'd be too many variables for that to work and for the whole microtransaction system to implement around that.
Yeah, it's unfortunate to think about, and that's kind of the bottom line with how profitable the recurrent revenue model is. As far as the tiers on the road to 99, the different rewards, would you change that at all? Is there anything you'd put a bit lower down or a bit higher up? I would consolidate the MyCourt customization again. I think that's a bit silly to spread that over about three different tiers. It's kind of one of those simple things that I'd unlock at about 70 overall complete.
Yeah, and I'd probably say lower the need to go to the gym in between games to maybe 85. I think 92 is probably a bit too high. And I mean, if you're a 92 overall player in real life, you probably don't need to go to the gym as much to remain competitive. Whereas, you know, somebody between like 60 and 85, they need to constantly go to the gym to like get better and to kind of, you know, hone their skills. So,
yeah.
I
suppose also if you're playing, the big thing is playing online and losing that boost online and having to interrupt the session to go and do it. And if you get to about 85, 86, even 88 overall, yeah, that's usually about two or three cap breakers for most people to get there initially. Just looking at this chart, I think most of them are, the early ones are usually about one cap breaker each to get to about the 86, 87 mark. By that time, I think you've put enough work in. You've probably gone to the gym enough times that it probably sticks, the fitness. You've probably got to a fairly fit point. Would you also change that maybe to more of a system like 2K17 where it was the drills you're doing that perhaps boost skills?
Yeah, I like that idea as well. But I kind of just thought of something then around, you know, lowering the, like, that incentive to 85.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to play devil's advocate here for a second, but like if they did that, if they lowered the need to go to the gym to like a lower kind of rating, could you imagine that they could absolutely kill it in microtransactions? Because a person could be like, okay, so if I make it to 80 overall, like within the first day, I don't have to go to any gym sessions in between pro-am games.
Yeah,
and that only takes like what, 100,000 VC,
something like that.
You know, some people would do that in a heartbeat to skip those sessions.
Oh yeah.
So it's like it makes total sense from like a financial standpoint for 2K. So I wouldn't be surprised if it actually happens now I've mentioned it.
And I suppose, I mean, it is possible. I haven't spent a single cent on VC this year, and yet I'm at 92 overall on PS4 and 89 on PC. So. And we got up to 317,000 VC, which went all to my team packs. But hey, Jordan packs, I'm not complaining. But yeah. It is possible once you get the cap breakers to just keep earning and earning, and you get they've 2K19's been a lot better about earning as well. So yeah. That's been really good compared to 2K18 and even possibly 2K17 as well. Because I'm trying to think back to 2K17, but I know I spent money on 2K17, so I kind of don't have a good reference for the grind in 2K17, I suppose, because I already got to 80-something overall. And, of course, in 2K17, you could pay on day one to get to 88. In 2K18 and 19, you can pay on day one about the same amount of VC to get to 85. So they have changed that as well.
Yeah, I can't even remember like what my progression was like in 17. I know I definitely spent money in 16, but that was more for my team packs. So, I can't even remember like how that progression, like how I ended up getting to 95 overall in 2K17.
I did a lot of work. I was doing work basically in every every session I was going to, and then I turned into Allen Iverson. Basically, I only showed up to the ones I really had to. So,
I've turned into Allen Iverson. Now I've like maxed out my badges and, you know, same. Don't need to go to the gym. So, yeah,
I think I only go to the practice now in 2K19 when I feel like doing one of the drills, just a bit of fun, like just to challenge myself for the shooting drill, for example.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even do that anymore. Like, I did that taking a charge drill so much that I was just like, oh, yeah. Man, like, I just want to play a game now. Like, I see no fun in this whatsoever.
The funny thing is, because I am playing it on PC, I often forget between games because I'm used to on PS4 not going to practice.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So I'm just not doing it on PC. I actually have turned into Allen Iverson on the PC version of 2K19. The other thing is the free throw badge. I would rather have a rating than a badge as well, which I always... Yep. Whenever we talk about my career, I have to throw that in there that I think we need the rating back. And I also think if you have a shooting archetype, you should have a rating that doesn't start at like 60-something. If you are a sharpshooter, maybe it should be at least 75%, like a league average of good shooters.
I think it should be an attribute that's easily worked up through practice as well, because that's really the only way you can get better at free throws. Some players like practice a lot and still can't get it, but like, you know, there's always some exceptions to the rule.
And the other thing that I would throw out there is being able to just practice free throws, not grinding the rating, but just being able to practice them at any time on the my court, if you wish, you know, just to practice the animation, because at the moment you can only do that up to 4 times in the gym when you've got to practice, when you've got enough drills left. And if you're trying to grind up other badges, then you've got to pick and choose which one you have, which I know is all part of the game. But if you want to, it goes back to what that Reddit post said last year about how 2K really pushing away from the people who are trying to practice the game and just cozying up to the elite players. If you want to get better at the game and practice the free throws, there's no facility to do so outside of team practices, which then become unavailable once you've completed the 4 drills. Then you've got to go and play the game again to unlock more drills. And it's did you ever play the free throw shooting game in the park, in the free throw event?
No. When was that? Which game was that in? That in 19?
That's 19. It's been on a couple of times. And they've once again, 2K cannot not have a passive aggressive message. Like it's like say you hit 10 in a row and you miss one, it's like it'll come up, "Oh, nice job, Shaq," as you're walking off the court,
right?
And things, and says, "Oh, you know, there's a practice facility." I'm like, "Yeah, but it's kind of limited in how much you can use it freely, you know." Mm. So I think that's another thing that you should be able to do. That if you limit 4 drills per practice session of actually being able to upgrade it, you should be able to go to the gym and at least just run through the drills for stick skills, basically. You know, even if you're not getting the my points, once you've exhausted the 4 drills, you don't get any more my points until you play another game. But if you could just practice the skills, I think that's very important.
So kind of like a 2KU kind of a thing.
Basically using it like 2KU, yeah.
Yeah, I can see like that would be really helpful, I think, because I know that, I mean, the practice gym is good for like getting down your jump shot, but there are certain things like in-game that I think could be implemented in the practice gym, like even something like practicing dunk contest dunks, like that would be a lot of fun. Like if you could do that in the practice gym, I would be in the practice gym all the time. Like that would be amazing. But
I'd finally beat Marquise Chris in a dunk contest.
Oh, awesome! He's, so did you win it?
I didn't win it. No, I think I got a score of 12 or something when I finally completed the dunk. It is the worst dunk contest mode, I think. In a modern game, go back to some of the early ones, and it's like they were very primitive. But it's I think 2K, for all the great things 2K has done, it has had the worst dunk contest modes in all their games that have dunk contests.
And the animations are just awful. Like seeing the ball go into the hoop when your arm is kind of nowhere near it, and you know the ways that the body contorts in order for it to kind of make the move happen. Like it's just it's an awful mode. I think you either need to put an option in where you can practice like those dunks, or just scrap it altogether because it's just not working at the moment.
It's got great presentation for the All-Star weekend, but it is probably the worst all-star events as far as dunk contests. And even three-point shooting, it's one it's two rounds for three-point shooting. But for the dunk contest, you've got one round, three dunks, no replacements. It is nothing like the NBA contest. For all the great things that 2K has done, it's surprisingly shitty. Like, it's strange. It's oddly terrible, the dunk contest in 2K. Like, and it's kind of surprising how much detail goes into the game, how surprisingly bad it is.
It's something that I think 2K needs to address at some point, because it kind of declines the quality of the rest of the game. Like, having something in there that's just so bad, it's not reflective of the rest of the experience.
Not at all. And three-point shooting is better, but again, even that doesn't feel quite right. The presentation is great, the intros and everything, but and like you said, even the animations, the clipping through the rim, not getting anywhere near it, surprisingly bad for what a great product 2K is otherwise, and surprising in that respect. So with that's pretty much 2K, I think, sorted as far as what we do. Although, would you bring back this, you know, if we're going to make a decision here, because this is totally our decision, but if we had the power, I think I'd bring back the bucket system from 2K16-17, and I'd open up the archetype system a little bit more so that it's a bit more fun offline and not as restrictive online, to the point of if you pick the wrong thing, you're screwed. I think that's something really important for balance moving forward. And so that there, or at the very least, every option, every archetype option needs to be viable. Well, there needs to be far more viable ones than there are now, because at the moment, you pick the wrong thing, or you pick the wrong wingspan or something like that, suddenly you're at such a disadvantage online, and it all comes down to not so much skill gaps and stick skills, but metagaming. And that's not a lot of fun.
No, it isn't. And if it was my decision, if I had to choose which way the archetype system would go moving forward, I would just say, okay, I'm going to play NBA Live 16 and just steal their system, because honestly, that was my favorite one, simply because that you could choose which archetype you wanted to play as, but if you deviated from that archetype, it can change over time. So I think that is the best way to go about it.
And also avoid having to play modes you don't want to, like getting the park rep up in 2K17.
Yeah, absolutely.
For Live, with its road to 99, which is not the right, I keep using that term because that's the title on that, but it's what it's doing.
For all intents and purposes, it is a road to 99.
It's their way to become the one rated 99 overall, so to speak.
Yeah.
But for their career mode, for the one, we noted that it's a bit easy, and possibly there's a happy medium in between the two, and maybe I feel that. It's funny that they kind of swapped systems to as far as the individual attribute upgrades, and I kind of like what Live does as far as having the as I said, the physical, the athletic attributes being better, but I don't like having to unlock all the secondary attributes. I feel like there's not as much we can change with our player. I think the icon path is a bit too restrictive. I like the idea at first. I think it has merit, but I think it needs to be a little bit more flexible as well.
Yeah, it's really strange what NBA Live has done as far as like their progression system is concerned, because I think having less attributes you can upgrade kind of, it makes the game seem less transparent, and that's not a good thing when you're building a character that reflects what you want, like what your strengths and weaknesses are. So, yeah, I just don't understand the direction they went in. Like, particularly when they had it down so well in Live 16.
Yeah.
And then they just completely went in the opposite direction. And then 2K, you know, to its credit almost, because, like, 2K started with, like, you know, a more restricted system. But then as time went by, you can kind of, in 2K19, you can now upgrade individual attributes. So
that's right.
Yeah, both games are just kind of gone in opposite directions, and it's kind of baffling.
They've swapped approaches almost, and
yeah,
I mean, Live doesn't have the bucket system, but it has that set path, the icon path, and I see what they're going for. But even as they've noted, as a lot of people have noted on Twitter, and I think Reddit, and even in our forum a couple of times as well, that restrictive nature, it almost doesn't matter what position you pick, because quite often I find myself being assigned as a small forward or a power forward when I'm doing live events or live run, and yeah. I'm basically a floor general point guard, so yeah. I'm not suited to play that position at all. You know, the matchmaking system, I mean, if we can talk about 2K's matchmaking system, and that's definitely an issue as well, but that's a problem with the live events. And you can say, oh, positionless boss, like, yeah, but it's, I mean, getting maybe into a bit of NBA discussion here, but I feel the whole concept of positionless basketball is a little bit overblown. I mean, we still see traditional roles to a large extent based on player size, if nothing else, you know, and defensive matchups. I mean, there's a reason we don't, we've seen some undersized centers, but we don't usually see, you know, no one's going to be putting Steph Curry at power forward, for example.
No. And one of the reasons why the Warriors can play positionless basketball at the moment is because they've got Kevin Durant, who's basically 7 feet tall.
Mm.
That's the size, at least the height of a traditional center.
Yeah.
So, I think while basketball has become a bit more positionless over time, there's still like a lot of physical attributes you need to play in certain positions.
You don't see like a bunch of traditional big men. You don't see a starting five of traditional big men, except maybe outside the All-Star game when it's done for fun, for example. Mm. You don't see DeMarcus Cousins bringing the ball up in regularity. Well, at the moment, you don't see him play. He's injured, unfortunately. But you don't see those bigs that can handle the ball really handling like a Steph Curry or a John Wall or a Damian Lillard or whoever, or Kemba Walker. You don't see them handling to that ability or that extent. You don't see a team fielding a player of 6 foot. Don't see a team fielding a lineup, I should say, of 6 foot three players. You know, there are still, as you say, Kevin Durant has the size of a center, if not the skill set of a traditional center, and or the position of one. So there has been some evolution, obviously, as the game changes, as it always does and has over the years. But you don't see them. You still have to match up physicality at some point. So it's a shame to say, oh, well, this player's a floor general. He can just fit in with these other players. Like, yeah, but you're putting me at power forward, and I've got to face the stretch big, and I'm giving up 6 or 7 inches to them. So it's not a... We can't pick the positions. Well, we do pick positions in NBA Live, but it's almost secondary to the icon path and the player type. And 2K, it's still... You have the archetypes as well, but it's the position comes into it more, seems to factor into it a little bit more. And I think that's the way to go. It has to be, because there's still some tradition there, and there's still some roles defensively, if nothing else, for assignments that are very crucial.
Absolutely. And I think 2K have made that distinction with positions as well, because I think it's a bit more important as far as like competitive players concerned as well. So they don't want players who are point guards playing at power forward in the 2K league. Like,
no,
that would just be a nightmare. So,
and of course, they've capped height and weight and everything at different positions as well, which I think you need to. I mean, you can say, oh, but there's been, you know, Ben Simmons comes in as what, he's 6'9", 6'10", as a point guard?
Yeah, I think he's around 6'10".
So he's got the Magic Johnson size, but they're rarities. And if you let everyone do it, everyone's going to do it. And anyone who doesn't do it is, again, going to be at such a disadvantage for not having done it. So you've got to put some restrictions there for balance. And unfortunately, NBA Live is, while I like some of the steps they've taken, they're nowhere near being close to being an esports league quality, unfortunately.
No. And I mean, I don't necessarily want it to become that way for NBA Live, but
true.
At the same time, it does kind of have to have its standards as if, like, you know, it should be good enough to be able to push that concept in a way. Like,
doesn't necessarily have to be esports, but should be good enough to, if you wanted to, be competitive online.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else you would change with the icon path? I mean, I don't know what to suggest, except for I don't think aping 2K is necessarily, to the letter, is necessarily the right way to go. Maybe just going back to the Live 16 approach. And picking positions and letting you have those rough archetypes and be able to evolve your player. Maybe that is, both games should be having their own version of that. Maybe that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I think so. I just don't like progressing to a specific archetypes, I suppose, specifications. Like, it's way too limiting. It makes all the players pretty much the same. It takes away all the individuality, and I don't know. I suppose there are some, you know, positives to the archetype system, but just generally, I'm not a huge fan of it.
It's turned out, I think, perhaps not worked out the way they wanted it to, or maybe it has, but certainly not, I don't think it's had the benefits that it was intended to. Maybe that it's supposed to give us more choice and balance the game, and yet it's made it less balanced and less viable choices.
Yeah, it would work if everybody was legit, like legitimately a role player, because I think that was the general concept, is that, okay, you need to think of your team as like maybe, you know, one or two scorers and then the others play a role or something like that, you know, similar to the NBA. But I think it fails in a sense that, you know, when you work up to 99 overall, what are you really 99 overall at? Like, you're a 99 overall defender. You're not a 99 overall, if that makes sense.
And of course, if you punch the ratings into the default creator player, you're not a 99 overall at all. I think you're closer to about an 87 or 88. So it's even...
Yeah,
it's
there's even, that as well.
It's even fudged in that regard. And that's a good point, because everyone's used to being player one as well. And the game that Ben and I played the other night, we had this small forward who just wanted to be a point forward. Actually, he just wanted to bring the ball up and shoot it himself without passing it once. And he quit very early when he got frozen out. So it was that, like, and then we played with three AI players. Funnily enough, not an advantage. Everyone who wants AI players out of there, because they think it makes other teams harder to play. 2-on-5 was not easy, I can tell you that much. It didn't really go in our favor. So the other thing, we talk about the fantasy aspect of it and realism and everything. I think realism has kind of gone out the window in career modes, because it's kind of the concept of, you know, you've got a story, you've got, in my career, you've got, if you play through the prelude, if you don't skip it, you've got fictional characters in the league. You've got Corey Harris on the Lakers and Marcus Young on the Spurs. So you've got fictional players in there anyway. You're, you know, yourself, your avatar is in the league. So a lot of realism has already gone out the window. And indeed, in 2K18, you're a DJ who makes the league. You know, somebody who quit basketball, became a DJ, and then suddenly makes it to the league and is a star at 60 overall, and a big deal at 60 overall. So a lot of realism has already gone out the window. Do you think maybe they should relax the restrictions on dunk packages and jump shots for different styles? Because it feels like if they kind of pick and choose what's realistic.
I mean, I don't necessarily want to see, like, pure sharpshooters being able to dunk like Jordan. So I don't know, maybe they could relax it a bit more. But at the same time, I think they still need a few restrictions in there. Because if you were like a sharpshooter that was able to dunk like Jordan, it's kind of like, well, you're not really picking your poison there.
True. I guess I just missed my 2K17 player and all the ducks I was doing with my point guard ridiculously on the up and under the basket. That baseline reverse was butter. that was so cheesy in 2K17. Good times with that. How far do you think you'll get this year? I don't think I'll really spend much more time in live. I think I'm about 83 overall on my current icon path, the floor general path. I want to get to 90 on PC just to get the Steam achievement, hunting that one.
Yeah.
PS4, depending, because I want to finish this second season, and I want to get to the Hall of Fame, because I'm one attribute away. And unfortunately, I made the All-Star team for the second time, and it didn't count on that Hall of Fame record thing.
Oh,
so
okay.
That was disappointing there. And Andre Drummond has just come back, so he's taken the lead in rebounds again. He's played enough games, unfortunately. So... So I've lost that accolade, but I'm now six-sevenths of the way to getting the total career assists, so I might be able to get it on that. That's okay. The last accolade I need. I want to see the cutscene, because I've never made the Hall of Fame. I've had really good my career games before, but I've never actually been able to get the accolades to play long enough to get the accolades for the Hall of Fame. So I want to get that, so I might get to 93, but as I said earlier, I think at some point I'd just be putting the quarter lengths down just to grind my points, and then I'm just doing it for bragging rights, and then I'm not necessarily enjoying the game. So I think I'll maybe get to the Hall of Fame and keep the player open as long as we want to dabble with online at one point or another, and then, yeah, from there. But how about you? Do you think you'd ever try and shoot for 95 or higher?
I think for me, I just want to play through my second season, and that would probably take me to potentially 93 overall.
Cool.
I'm more about, like, you know, seasons and, you know, games played than, say, you know, making it to certain overalls. But at the moment, like, I'm about two games off the playoffs, so, you know, getting through that second season is kind of a real goal, like an achievable goal at the moment.
Yep.
Even, you know, with the schedule I have. But I feel like I'm practically done with it. Aside from, like, getting the, you know, the daily rewards and stuff like that, I don't feel as much of an incentive to play my career anymore. As far as NBA Live is concerned, I want to give that a bit more of a crack, but at the same time, I don't know. Just, I don't feel like it's been as great of an experience this year.
Yeah.
Like, I had a really good experience in NBA Live 18, and that might be because, like, I played it exclusively.
Yeah.
But
this time
around, I've made, like, a shooting point guard, and the shooting mechanics are just a little bit off or something, so I'm, like, not really shooting that well.
Definitely.
You never know. I could have, like, a Trae Young rookie season where I shoot really poorly at the start and then, you know, get it together towards the end, but yeah, I don't know. I had initial excitement for NBA Live 19 and its one mode when I had that really, like, fun first game, the one where I got dunked on by Donovan Mitchell. Yeah, I mean, I guess my excitement for the mode just kind of tempered off, like, as soon as I saw that I was being assigned 44 minutes a night, and pretty much pretty much every time I hear a commentary line from Jay Williams, but
that doesn't help. You have to turn off the commentary if you want to play it, I suppose, and just play it like you're, just play it like you're actually in the stadium and not hearing the commentary.
Yeah, I mean, it might be fun just kind of, you know, from an authenticity standpoint, just to try that one time, because if you are playing out there, you don't hear the commentary calls; you just hear the bouncing of the basketball most of the time. So,
when my old TV died and I was using a monitor as my screen, and I had a old speakers hooked up and one of them wasn't working, so I'd actually only heard the crowd sounds, the commentary wasn't coming through properly.
Okay.
It was a very interesting experience. I kind of have been tempted to turn the commentary off. That's in 2K. To turn it off and just play with that, because it was very, you know, you just hear the arena sounds and everything and you don't hear the commentary. It's a very different experience, and I don't hate the commentary in 2K. It's pretty good. Although I've heard some stories way too many times, and Bill Simmons, I've got Bill Simmons about four or five times, and it's the same story, and it's kind of the weakness of the whole thing, especially how long he sticks around the whole half. So it's a bit, I've heard this story before, Bill, and I disagreed with it the first time as well. So
is that the one about what was it, like the Lakers or the Celtics being the best team in NBA history or something like that?
Something like that. Yeah. That's you got it in one. I think Live 19 wasn't as big a jump in gameplay, perhaps, as well. There's other issues, I suppose. And burnout. I mean, we've played, you're in there hitting the playoffs in your second season in my career. I'm 58 games into the second season, almost halfway through yet another game on PC as well. I'm not sure I really want to spend any more time with a career mode, yet another career mode from scratch, because I'm thinking about three games into the league. In Live 19, I've kind of been over it. I'm happy to finish my business with 2K14 with both games on PS4 and PC in 2K19. I'm happy to finish my business there, but I kind of don't want to go with Live 19 as well. I'd rather do something else, but unfortunately Franchise and Ultimate Team are a disappointment. So I think if anything, I'll end up, once I've finished my business with my career, I think I'll play more of my team, because that's quite fun this year.
Yeah, and when it comes down to it, there's only so much basketball video games you can play. Like, I know recently I've just gotten Mortal Kombat 11, and I kind of want to play that a bit more. Like, so, you know, there's only so many hours in the day, and, at some point, you got to kind of have to put the basketball video games down and just kind of assign some more time to other video games.
Oh, take a break. Hey, go outside for a run for me, you know. take a break and, you know, write and everything. Since you've got Mortal Kombat 11, I'd forgotten you'd pick that up, actually. Have you gone through the tutorials?
I have been through a few of them, and they're explained really well, and I skimmed through your article about how, like, 2K could learn a lot from that.
Yeah,
I tend to agree.
Yeah, because I was going to once again shamelessly bring up my article on that. thank you. your money will be PayPal to you shortly. because I play that, and they're explaining the frames and everything, and how different startup frames of moves, and how all the metagaming. And you look how much onboarding there is there, and how little onboarding there is. 2KU is okay, and to an extent, and it's not really fun to play through three times in the prelude, of course, too, when you're trying to, you know, just do something in the prelude apart from when you finish the career. Pre-release prelude, that is, I should say. But there's so much onboarding they could do with the metagaming, and, you know, this is the advantage and disadvantage of these moves and everything. That they just don't. And I guess it's because they want people to watch 2K TV or the 2K League, I guess. And that's where they're going to drop some tips and everything. But again, it's kind of elitist gatekeeping, I feel, that really has pushed people away from the mode. And it's really become about the connected experiences. And it's, if you do want to stick to the NBA side of things, it's as much fun as I've had. There's just something about it that it's just in the back of the mind. I don't, maybe is that just me, or do you feel a bit of that too?
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of wish that all the controls were there, and all like the kind of tips were just kind of in the game to start with. And I know, as you said, it does kind of give people an incentive to watch like 2K TV and that. But I mean, I would argue that people don't necessarily watch 2K TV for those tips. I know, you know, probably a lot of them probably watch it for the, you know, the trivia and you know, the player interviews and, you know, that kind of stuff. So
highlights, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. It just seems like stuff that should be in the game.
So Road to 99, looks like we're not getting to 99 this year, either of us. You got to 98 in didn't you? Could you get to 99 in Live 18, or was it capped at 98?
I got to 98 in Live 18, and the most recent time I got to 99 was in NBA 2K16.
So I think the highest I've got was 95 in 2K17. Then I accidentally overwrote my save from the cloud, and because I went back to 92. And because I uninstalled the game and didn't download the new data before the server shut down, that game is now gone forever. So I had the screenshots are my only memory, and the fun times of Pro-Am are my only memories of that time. But 95 is as high as I've been able to get. That, of course, was the park rep year, which I was just not having a bar off, basically.
Yeah.
We got that 5 straight wins in the park that time. That was after choking twice on 4 wins, we finally got that trophy, so that was nice. But overall, I have, at least in 2K17 and 2K19, and of course when we started playing Pro-Am in 2K16 as well, didn't really like the story. Well, Ben and I talked about that a couple of episodes ago, as we obviously, so I won't get into that again. It's been a fun road, at least in 2K, and whether if I haven't reached 99, I've still felt very fulfilled. And I think at the end of the day, especially when you do reset it every year, that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, I think for me, reaching 99 is kind of not really an achievable thing. So all I can really do is just enjoy the ride along the way.
On the plus side, Ben and I did get to dance in the background of the 99 overall YouTuber. So if you saw two people disco dancing in the background of that video, that was us. We were those fools. But I suppose a long and winding road indeed. So that has brought us to the end of episode number 284 of the NLC podcast. Good to have you back on the show, Kenny.
Yeah, it's good to be back as well. it's been an interesting conversation, and hopefully we can have another one again pretty soon.
Absolutely, and we hope that you enjoyed listening to it as well. If you did, we encourage you to subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can also find us on various podcatching apps, including Stitcher and Podcast Addict. Or you can keep streaming on the NLSC itself, as long as you're tuning in and enjoying the show each and every week. That is the main thing. You can also connect with us on social media. On Twitter and Facebook, we are the NLSC. On Instagram, we are NLSC Basketball. On YouTube, we are NBA Live Series Center. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, NBA-Live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that will do it for episode number 284 of the NLSC podcast. Thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Kenny.
Go get buckets, everyone.